hosts, Maya Monell and Aaron Papworth, founders of the Navit Money app, the money management app that uses behavioral science to foster financial wellness. On this episode of the Navit podcast, Aaron and I sit down with Stephanie LeBlanc-Godfrey, global head of inclusion for women of color, Google. She's also the founder of Parenting Backwards, which focuses on the importance of bringing your kids on your learning journey. From building a more inclusive, diverse, and equitable workplace to ensuring your kids' first money memory is one of joy and positivity, Stephanie unpacks the unique trials working parents face and how we can all help close wealth gaps beyond the workplace. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Navit podcast. Today, Aaron and I are so excited to be sitting down with Stephanie. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you both virtually, but still glad that we can have a great conversation today.
Exactly. I mean, we can't tell you how thrilled we are for platforms like Squadcast that allow us to talk and record audio at the same time, or see each other and record audio at the same time. It's amazing. Stephanie, we're just going to hop right in because we have a lot of topics to get through and we know our audience is super jazzed to hear from you. So let's dive right in. We'll explore on this episode both your founding of Parenting Backwards and your role as global head of inclusion programs for women of color at Google. But first, give us a little bit of a background of what led you to these roles.
Sure. So my background, I got my degree in electrical engineering. I knew I wanted to be in tech and engineering since I was like 10 years old. I had an uncle that worked at IBM. And so he bought me my first Gateway, which is dating myself. I don't know if it can exist. And so he would take it apart and show me all the things. So I was like 10 years old, boom, that's what I'm going to do. And then got my degree, got into the work world, and it was just so isolating. I didn't see anyone like myself. I didn't see anyone in leadership that was a woman of color, was a Black woman, was a Black man for that instance. And so I just didn't see anyone like me. And so it felt like there wasn't a path forward in that environment for me. And so I spent some time like trying to figure out what's next for me. I'm a huge analytical nerd with numbers and all of those things. And so I, you know, tried to find what that could look like at the time. And digital media was the path forward. So completely left the engineering within the finance industry and then went into digital media for the next 10 plus years. And then after those 10 years or within those 10 years, I looked around and I was like, I think I have a career in digital media. I don't think that's the career that I wanted, though.
How did I get here?
How did I get here? Time flies. And so I spent time trying to dual pathing, right? So still doing my job in that field, but trying to figure out what was next for me. And diversity and inclusion was it at the time that I started within it. It wasn't the buzzword or even where it is today, where it's a hot topic of conversation as it should be. And so I did a lot of work, a lot of frustration and sadness as I like tried to get into that field and get to that role and talk about right. what those transferable skills are to get into D&I from a media background was tough, but it paid off. And so now I'm in this space where I'm doing scaled work for women of color. And so that's Black, Latinx, and Indigenous women in terms of working on retaining them within the field of technology. We have data that Google publishes publicly that shows hiring and representation and also attrition levels that show that those communities are not being hired as often and then are leaving at higher rates than others. And so this is an investment on Google's part to, you know, really put a focus in on supporting those communities so that they could really thrive in a great company.
Completely. I want to ask so many questions on how they do that, but I think we will continue that conversation.
So yeah, so there are a couple of, you know, key, I think, points that we're going to make across this episode, which we're really excited to dive in. And the first one that I really want to capture is your founding of Parenting Backwards. And when you and I first connected, this gave a lot of excitement in your voice. I could feel the love for this topic, and I really want to capture that and the work that you're doing at, you know, with Parenting Backwards. So can you give our audience a little bit more about, you know, background about what you're trying to do? And, you know, you started your career, like you said, in engineering, so within the realm of finance. So I suspect that there's nobody better suited to reverse engineer parenthood. So why don't you give us a brief introduction to Parenting Backwards?
Yeah, so Parenting Backwards is a new venture that I started in January of 2020. And it really meshes together my focus on women in the workplace, specifically professional women, and then also connecting the fact that so many of them are parents. So we talk about the investment of having mentors and sponsors, and, you know, we go to the conferences and we hire the coaches and we do all these things for our professional lives. But there isn't really space created to really focus in on and strengthen our parenting strategies and our parenting styles, and to learn new techniques to self-assess who we are and how we show up and why we show up the way that we do as parents. And so that's really my goal with Parenting Backwards. And so there's a couple different pillars within that. So one of them is taking them on the journey with you, taking your kids in age-appropriate ways on the journey. So as we're reading the self-help books, as we are, you know, brushing up on or learning new skills, how do we teach that to them at their age so that they have that as they're growing up and into adulthood is one pillar. And the second is around, you know, taking when you know that you're about to have a child, you're like, I want them to be, you know, empathetic and kind and financially savvy and like all of these things, all of these grand values and skills that we want them to have. But the truth of it is, what does that look like for ourselves? where do we stand? How are we espousing the skills and values that we're putting on our children? And so again, doing that self-assessment of the skills and values that we want them to have, where we stand with them, and then doing the work that we need to do to role model what we want them to be. Because we can preach to them each and every day, and it will kind of go in one ear and out the other. But if they're seeing us do a thing, then they pick up on that and they start doing it, right? And so being able to role model is really important. And I think what really pushed me to do it, because I was like, yeah, what do I know? My friends, my kids are older than the kids of my friends. And so they would always come to me to be like, hey, we need some advice on anything from strollers to how to have conversations with your manager when they were coming back from maternity leave. And so the way in which I would just engage with them on those topics, taking the pressure and the burden off of them, of them having to do all the things right and perfect, I think resonated really well. And so they kept pushing me, Steph, do something with all this, scale it, talk to more people. And so that's, I'm jumping in with both feet on that.
It's amazing.
I think both Erin and I are so excited. Certainly, Erin, as a mother of a young child, I think could definitely learn a lot from all that you're working on. And, you know, given your financial background, you've created a really compelling, a few, I'm sure, more than a few, very compelling ways to include your children, like you said, at a young age in financial decision making. And this is something that's so important and something that we value so much at Navit, of, you know, early action leads to better decisions today, tomorrow, and in, you know, their future. So what are some of those strategies we can all employ to foster financial literacy in our own homes?
Yeah, so that's what's really exciting to me right now, because I am on my own journey of financial fitness, as one could call it. And so, like, checking off the boxes, getting rid of the debt, maxing out the 401, like making sure that all those basics are done, right? Yeah. And so as I'm doing that, again, going back to one of the pillars, which is taking your kids on your learning journeys with you, I had this Dave Ramsey binge, I'm talking about a binge session for like, call it almost a month, where I just needed him to whip me into shape through his own podcast. And so I decided for Christmas, we typically just go on Amazon or wherever, buy everything virtually, have it shipped, and like it's a done deal, seamless, right? But to my kids, they don't get it. They don't understand the concept of money, like literal money, not even like a credit or a debit card. And so I decided my husband came along for the journey with me. Yes. And so, right. And so for last Christmas, we sat down as a family, made a list of everyone that we were going to get gifts for, set a budget for them, went to a bank, took out the money, and went to an actual mall. People still do that. They still go to malls. And so we spent the day at the mall. And of course, I told you I am a numbers geek. And so we did this in a Sheets, Google Sheets. And I taught my daughter right in the mall how to create a formula to subtract. So this way, as she's buying, she sees the subtraction and left.
Amazing.
So we're armed with cash and we're armed with the technology. And so off we went to the mall, did a bunch of shopping, filled in our sheet as we were going along. And then when it came to their dad, they like went over budget. And I was like, okay, if you go over budget, that's fine. We'll have to take budget from someone else's gift. Are you comfortable with that? Or do you want to reassess what you've just purchased? And so we went through that exercise, and like the cashiers at certain places were just like, wait, what are you doing? And so a couple of them had me like explain like what the whole thing was. And they were like, wow, that's really cool. But I think that the learnings that they got from that was, one, money in an envelope goes really quickly.
Yes,
it does.
And so it went from it went from a fat envelope to dwindle down. So that was like, okay, I get like money goes quickly, and I understand almost what's the value of like a shirt versus earrings, like to understand what that means, that connection one to one. And then they were just really excited about like, okay, like let's do this again. So part of the Dave Ramsey thing is like save, invest, spend. And so we opened up a bank account for them to do the savings account. And because of COVID, we were not able to take any vacations, which they were not happy about at all. So we started a travel fund, went to Marshall's, got this cute little shadow box that says travel fund on the front. And to this day, if they quote unquote find money, which is me and my husband's money that we put in our room on our dresser, they will take that money and put it in the travel fund. When they get money from odd jobs, they will ask for change so that they can then split the money to put in their travel fund. So like just that one thing that we did on that day has changed the way that they value money in terms of how they see it and how they use it and what it can be used for. So it's amazing. Amazing.
I love this story so much. And just want to replicate it immediately, especially as we're recording this in October. So I can't wait to do that for myself.
Yes.
actually go to the bank and get out money. Yeah. But one of the reasons why I love it is Erin and I were recently interviewing a woman who runs a kind of virtual women and money community and called the Pledgettes. And she was telling us, Jen was telling us that, you know, one of the most impactful questions she can ask her new members is, what's your first money memory? And so I think about this and I think about your three kids and I'm like, this might be it. Like, this might be their first money memory. And that just brings so much joy to my heart because we all typically, you know, like our first money memories are pretty negative. Like they're not, most people don't have exciting money memories and they most often are related to how their parents maybe mismanaged or, you know, dealt with money in general. And so, yeah. And so that actually kind of leads me into our next topic here, but we know financial literacy, you know, again, fostered at that early age can drastically impact income and wealth generation in adulthood, which we're seeing in real time, especially during COVID. So how do you see this work impacting the racial wealth gap more broadly?
Yeah.
And sorry, I have to add to, I'm really curious if you're working with, in the parenting backwards, you're working with working moms, right? So it would be interesting to hear also if you think that there's some increased retention or how does it help in this work with the parenting side? Do you see it helping them in the work side of being able to be more present in the work? So those are two different questions. Love you to answer.
Yeah. So I think with the racial equity gap, when I started to do the research on it in terms of all of the inputs that go into that, that's housing, that's health, that's poverty, that's redlining, like all of these systemic things that are barriers to people of color being able to build wealth and then be able to have a legacy and pass things down from generation to generation, right? What we typically see, speaking in generalities, is that white people have a safety net of some sort, right? Whether it's, you know, something that's left from a grandparent or just parents who are educated and then can guide them on how they should manage their money and what they should do with it, versus the histories of Black folks and people of color who were not afforded the opportunities and the understandings of money to be able to pass down wealth generation to generation. And I think even for me, I'm first generation American, graduating college and having this sort of career, I've also had to navigate that alone a bit. And so I personally feel a little behind the eight ball in terms of like knowing from my first job that I should have been maxing out my 401k then. And like just those basic foundation things that I mentioned earlier, having that foundation to set you up for retirement and for all of these things is super critical. And then there's the cultural component that comes into it where typically, and this is in Black and Asian Hispanic families as well, where we're often taking care of, you know, family members, cousins, aunts, uncles, like the whole deal. And then our obligation that we feel to our community. So being oftentimes the first in a family, the first in the community, the first from this town, the first. And so then there's also this need to then reach back and help and support. And so while I think that obligation is really heartfelt and needed and supported, it does then have an impact on the amount of money that individuals are then able to save for themselves to then prepare for their families. And then tap onto that, this like now sandwich generation of like having kids and then also then taking care of parents. Like we're just set up.
Caregiving is really set up to fail.
Right.
And then you're not And then the pay, you're not getting equal pay too. So now there are so many disadvantages there.
Exactly. I think it was back in August. I forget the day that said like, okay, August this day is the amount of days that it would take for a Black woman to make the same amount of money as a white man. And that's just the devastating part. And when it comes to the retention piece, you know, even if we do go to the same schools, go to the same B schools, do the same resume, we're still not getting the same pay. And again, that impacts kind of even based on compound interest. We then have less to put into the bank to invest and do those things so that we are set up in a good place.
Yeah, I think so many good points there. I think one of the things that Aaron and I have been batting around a lot recently is the obvious and maybe not so obvious reality that money can be expensive and money can be cheap. Mm-hmm. And how you optimize your financial opportunities is value based on those two different things, right? It's like if you have learned all of these kind of key fundamentals to financial wellness early on, then money is cheaper for you. But if you haven't, then most likely it is more expensive and you're kind of caught then in that trap.
I think this all kind of ties together and we're really interested. So it's lovely to hear the background in your career and then also the parenting backwards kind of feeds into, I think your overall mission seems to be really increasing equity in the workplace and supporting women with all their different roles, parenting and professional. So I'm curious, are you like creating policy? Are you informing? Are you monitoring? Like how do you push your agenda forward in such a massive company?
Sure. So what's so interesting? So I talked about women of color and then my parenting backwards. And so worlds have collided. So due to COVID, we've stood up a work stream, a committee of folks to take a look at all of our policies, programs, and processes as it relates to caregivers and parents to do a landscape analysis, figure out what the gaps are and what we should be offering to our employees, but also realizing that to work at Google or any of these tech companies, it also comes from a place of privilege, right? So in talking about the racial wealth gap, there's also an education gap that is going to happen, right? We are far more likely able to get the tutors, get the additional nanny, do the learning pods, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get it done so that our kids don't skip a beat. And for those that are outside of that and don't have those options and are just literally focusing on survival in these moments, they don't have that. And so that education gap widens. And so the focus has to not only be on the internal employees, but also what the impact of our internal work or our internal policies will have externally. And so we have to dual path how we play in this space.
Definitely. So, yeah, I want to stay on the topic of wealth inequalities for a bit. And we have a lot of listeners who are looking for kind of healthy workplaces and navigating as they look to navigate their careers while still desiring to work for companies that, you know, promote their values and ethics as well. So as a leader in the space, what strategies have you seen these organizations, both big and small, that have been effective in closing the wealth gap in their workforce?
Yeah, I think having the space to have the conversation and listening to employees. I think what's tough though is you don't actually know what a company is doing until you're in the company.
Yeah, true.
So you can read the press releases and you're like, oh, this sounds like a great company to work with. And then you get in there and you're like,
That's not that. It's a startup. I mean, it's literally going in blind, right?
Right. And so I think it's asking certain questions and from both the like hiring, the decision makers, hiring committees side, and then in terms of the employees or just prospective talent that's going in terms of asking each other questions and holding each other accountable. For a startup, there is the infinite possibility that you can be the next Google, right? But mm-hmm. Google was started by a couple of white guys in a rich town in a garage, right? And so that homogenousness, if that's a word, they just kind of rolled with it until they are where they are. And then there's not
infrastructure.
It's no longer, right. There's no infrastructure there for that diversity of race, gender, enablement, totally. Like all of those things, right? And so my kind of words to startups is to start thinking about that early and often, even if it is you and the other white guy or the other white woman or whoever it is, to be aware of that areas to increase in your diversity. And be really bullish about finding people in other places, right? Finding Black people does not equal HBCUs, right? Because the majority of us went to PWIs, predominantly white institutions. Mm-hmm. And so reimagining the same way that you do your business decisions for your company, that's the same fervor in which you should be thinking about the diversity for your company. And it just offers just society to lift the tides on all sides, that you're not scrambling to find a person of color or a woman in this space, but that you're doing it from the ground up so that they can then bring in their friends, bring in their like-minded individuals that they know that can also continue to keep that diversity alive. And then the impact that has on the equity gap is, you know, we're in the game earlier. We're not struggling to find a job. We're not forced almost to go back to school. Maybe if I get more degrees, maybe if I get, you know, another certification or another this, another that will make me more marketable to a company, that we can get in because, you know, we have the potential versus already having the established qualifications that can get us in the door earlier to start earning more earlier.
Do you advocate for diversity trainings for white managers and people like leadership? You know, how have you seen, has that worked? Have like DEI or whatever they call it, equity now trainings, mm-hmm. has that worked? Have you really seen when you target, because essentially right now the majority of leadership are white in your context. So I always feel like it's less about training the minority groups who already know their situation. It's all about really training the people of power and the white managers to understand how to create a safer environment and allow that diversity to flourish in their environment. So yeah, I'm curious what you're saying. Has it been effective? What's worked? What hasn't?
Yeah. So I think when it comes to attrition rates, right? Why people leave. They don't leave a company, they leave a manager. It all begins and ends with the relationship that you have with a manager, whether you stay at a company or not. So the level of accountability and where the focus should be, to your point, should be on the managers, right? Yeah. Like, guess what? We're reading all the books. As women, we're reading all the books.
We already know.
Right. As Black folks, we're reading all the books. We know the things that we have to do. How it's interpreted when we do that is a whole other story. Aggressive and this and that, right? Yeah. And so trainings is where it has to be, and not just on DEI trainings, right? It has to be something that's integrated into every single type of training, whether it's a sales training, whether it's like, you know, the mandatory compliance trainings that we all have to take at some point. Diversity, the conversation around diversity and different cultures and bias all has to be included in there. It can't be like, let's talk about business and then let's talk about diversity. Because yes. then you'll always view it as this side project that yeah. doesn't have mm-hmm. any goals tied to it, doesn't impact my bonus or my salary or anything. So then what's yeah. the incentive to, yeah. outside of the altruistic, I'm a good human, right? What's the incentive for folks to really lean in, and do this work? And so that's that sort of competency around having honest, open, and complex conversations with your direct reports is something that we have to focus on. So, you know, it's less of a training, but more conversations. Right. Like talking exactly. about a thing, being comfortable talking about a thing, creating spaces where you can put your foot in your mouth and not feel like you're going to get canceled or dragged by, yeah. by the mob. But right. like, that's the type of training. And I don't even want to use the term training because then it just has that connotation of ugh. But those are the types of spaces that we have to create internally for folks who have never had to have these conversations before, folks mm-hmm. who have never had to engage with certain people before, whether it be Black or whether it be someone who's trans, to learn how to do it. You have to learn how.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to have a space where you, like I said, you could put your foot in your mouth and someone will be like, all right, let me help you take foot out of mouth and yeah. this is what you should do for the next time. There has to be a level of empathy in the way that we go about these conversations.
Completely.
Stephanie, I thank you so much. First of all, we've covered, I feel like, all the grounds. We've covered parenting, we've covered hiring, we've covered inclusion and diversity, and creating a more fair and equitable workforce. I think we're really excited to see all of the great work that you continue to do with both Parenting Backwards as well as at Google. So now I want to turn us to one of our favorite rounds, which is at the end, we like to ask every guest a few rapid fire questions. So the first up is, what money stereotypes do you think society must overcome?
Keeping up with the Joneses.
Oh, yes.
Love that. Definitely.
Yes. Yeah. Secondly, not your story.
Exactly. Yeah. Secondly, how do you define a healthy money mindset?
I think money should be looked at as a vehicle to reach your goals, right? Yes. Figuring out who you want to be, what you want to accomplish, and then, okay, what's the money that's needed to get there versus money driving everything. Exactly. And enjoy, save, invest, and enjoy the money that you make.
Yes.
We promised we didn't give her that. And lastly, when was the last time you nabbed something financially and how did you do it?
So I'm in the midst of that right now. Backdoor, mega backdoor Roth IRAs. That's my jam right now, trying to figure out how to do that. And so I've been reading a lot around like how to set it up, what it takes to do all that. Cause like I said, I worked on the foundation. And so now I need to up my game in the next financial level. And that's that.
Love it.
That's amazing. So exciting to say, you know, we talk a lot about the foundation, like you got to understand the foundation of money, the savings, like you said, the savings, the spending. We talk about getting off high interest debt. But once you're free, once you've set up that foundation, then the world is your oyster. And then it's all about, how do I grow my wealth and how do I use it as my vehicle to joy and happiness and all of the things? So you've achieved that, my friend.
And I'm so excited. I'm so excited that I got there. And so love to have this conversation about it to encourage others to do it. And like I said, I felt like I was behind the eight ball, but I was super zoomed in and focused on making that difference. So for the next generation.
How do you feel about your confidence now about yourself and life? Has there been a shift in, once I figured it out, I was like, I felt like my whole ethos of like confidence and in self actualization was achieved.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And it's weird because like you're wondering what the connection is. But I think for me, there was always this like cowering of like, oh, I've got this and that, and oh, I want to do X, Y, and Z, but I can't because I have all of this saddling me down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now to like, one, get rid of the debt, and then two, be able to kind of set myself up for retirement. It's like that, like check the box, like, okay, I completed a thing. Now what's the next thing? Like, and then you get more excited
about going
down the path. Totally. Yeah. Your finances don't have to be scary, but they should be exciting. I love that.
Right. And they are.
Exactly.
Don't talk about finances.
No, exactly.
No one talks about what they're doing. And now I ask everybody like all sorts of things, like, what are you doing? How much are you saving? Like, and not everyone wants to have that conversation, by the way.
Well, it's a community feature in the app. It's to show other people, you know, what they're doing at a de-identified level. So you can realize your own opportunity.
Exactly.
And everyone's snapping. By virtue of the fact you are an adult, you are managing your money. So, like, we got to start talking about it.
Yeah, everybody has to do it. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We know others are interested in this conversation. So, do you want to give everybody a place to go find you and follow you?
Yes, absolutely. So, my website is www.imslg.com. And on Instagram, where I share all of my fun family stories, is I_AM_SLG. And then finally, Parenting Backwards. And that's where I really focus in on tactical things that you can do. And so that's also on Instagram as well.
Can't wait to go follow you. I'm going to go do that right now. We're so excited. Thank you so much once again for joining us. And frankly, we can't wait to have you back for another episode soon.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you.
Talking about wealth generation. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Care to continue the convo? You can connect with fellow navigators in the app or on our Let's Nav It Facebook page. Oh, and be sure to get social with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Let's Nav It. That's LETSNAVIT. And finally, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it would really help us if you would take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. That's it for today's episode. Until next time,
let's